talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. The Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks, welcome aboard. It's 9 p.m. here on the East Coast of the United States, and it is Thursday night, and you know what day and time it is wherever you are listening to the Steve Malzberg Show. We have some news involving Mike Pence, who received a subpoena from the special counsel investigating Donald Trump and January 6th. We'll talk a little bit about that and a lot more about Biden's speech and an interview that he gave yesterday to PBS, Judy Woodruff. Wait till you hear some of the answers came out of his mouth. But we'll get to that, as I said, in a second. Joining us now, I am so proud to have this man on this show. I've interviewed him on other shows, and he is the great civil rights veteran, founder of the Woodson Center. We welcome in Robert Woodson. Robert, great to talk to you, sir. Thank you so much.
Good being with you again.
Well, I appreciate it. So let me get right to the first question. We spoke right after the video came out of the Tyre Nichols and set this interview up. I went away, and that's why there's the space in between. But let me ask you this. I know that the media looks to exploit things like this, and they do. But let me ask you specifically, at the State of the Union on Tuesday, Joe Biden had the parents of Tyre Nichols up sitting with Jill Biden up in the balcony area and introduced them and all that. But of course, then went on to talk about police reform and good cops, bad cops, this, that, the other. Do you feel that that's in any way exploitation of what happened to Tyre Nichols?
I think what the president did was absolutely obscene. I think we all must grieve for the death of anybody, Tyre Nichols included. But what Biden and others have done to take a situation like this as an opportunity to really demonize law enforcement and really plays into this race grievance narrative that is destroying this nation. If you look at the numbers, there are about 20 people, unarmed blacks, who die at the hands of the police. Most of them are resisting arrest. 20. But yet, it's portrayed as if it's the greatest threat to black males is coming from the police. And progressive politicians and others exploit every opportunity they get to demonize and weaponize the race issue. There are 6,000 young people under the age of 18 who die on the streets of our cities. 70% are black. It's very interesting. The youngest one this past July was a 5-month-old pushed in a baby carriage by her mother and was shot through the head in Chicago. But yeah. Nobody ever knows the names of people like this. Even the 3-year-old niece of George Floyd was asleep and with her grandmother on New Year's Eve, and a bullet came through and broke 3 of her ribs and entered her lungs. But you don't hear about the real crisis facing Black America, and that is the thousands and thousands of people who are being murdered. But instead, Biden chooses to lionize and almost make a martyr out of people who are killed by law enforcement. And as a consequence, it ends up making conditions worse for those same communities. The murder rate goes up in the black community in relation to the extent to which law enforcement becomes less aggressive. It's called the Ferguson effect. Less law enforcement, the more murders, the more they blame systemic racism and the police as an extension of white supremacy. So it's really an obscene gesture for him to continue to push this race grievance narrative and ignore the deaths of the thousands of children that are dying in our urban centers every year.
So correct. So well said. And I just wish that the Republic, and I say this about almost every single issue, Robert, over the course of almost every single night, whether it's abortion or anything else, I just wish Republicans would say just what you said. And if not, if white Republicans are afraid to say it because they'll be called racist, then let Tim Scott say it. I don't understand why they don't. I really don't. But here's something else. The media. I've seen Michael Brown Sr., I shouldn't say that. I'm not 100% sure. I think it is. But the father of Michael Brown was being interviewed on CNN about the shooting and the whole thing. He was in Washington for the State of the Union, as if he fits into the same category, or his son fit into the same category as Tyre Nichols. He attacked a police officer. He charged at a police officer. The Obama Justice Department, civil rights, I said there were no civil rights charges to be brought against the police officer, that the witnesses who said hands up, don't shoot, were lying. Yet they talked to Michael Brown's father as if it's all the same, that one, because they're black, that they all fit in the same category.
Well, I'll go one better for you. George Floyd, there's a large portrait of him at Catholic University hanging on a wall with him as a suffering Christ being held in the arms by the Virgin Mary. George Floyd.
Wow.
That's how woke that we have become, that we have lionized people like this because it then fits the racial narrative. And I'm telling you, the Biden administration is playing into this narrative that they're using the rich legacy of the civil rights movement as a bludgeon against this country. They're supposed to be fighting for justice for blacks, but yet when they burn the American flag and then dump Bibles into the flag and condemn the nuclear family as Eurocentric and therefore racist, these are exactly the virtues and values that enabled Black America to survive slavery and discrimination. That's exactly what we were able. We when whites were at their worst, we were at their best. It was because our reliance upon the family. Between 1930 and 1940, during the Depression, when racism was enshrined in law, Black America had the highest marriage rate of any other group in society, and elderly people could walk safely in their community without fear of being assaulted by their grandchildren. Because of faith, family, and a belief in self-determination, and we believed in the founding values of this country.
Yeah, just incredible. We're talking to Robert Woodson, founder of the Woodson Center here on the Steve Malzberg Show. Or let me let you hear from a member of the so-called squad, a handful of Democratic Congress women who are really, really radical left. And this is something that really needs to be heard. It's Cori Bush, Democrat from Missouri. And she was standing when she said this on television. She was standing next to Michael Brown Sr. It is Michael Brown Sr. But here's what she had to say about the members, the Republicans in the House. This is cut 42.
We have a House that is Republican controlled, that is this MAGA insurrectionist platform that gets to lead, you know, in Congress, where white supremacy gets to lead in Congress every single day.
White supremacy gets to lead in Congress every single day. Well, first, give me your reaction to these kinds of statements that come from the squad very often.
Well, it really is almost self-marginalizing. Nobody takes her serious. But certainly everyday Black Americans don't. They are strongly in opposition to the police. 80% of Black Americans polled support the police, and they're against defunding the police. Only 60% of Blacks do not believe that racial discrimination is a principal barrier to their flourishing. So this woman, I don't know who she's supposed to be speaking for, but it certainly isn't rank and file Black folks, man. It certainly isn't.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. I want to just let you hear, as Black History Month began on February 1st, the and there's no people dumber and more obnoxious and irresponsible than the women who make up The View. But I want you to hear what they had to say. This is Whoopi Goldberg, and then they had a guest, Ebony Williams, who's Black, weighing in. Just give a listen to this. This is number 43.
There's always been Black people in Florida, and if you're not careful, that base is going to rise up and vote your ass out of there.
You think he's a racist?
I think he's anti-Black, and I really like to say that precisely because Sonny made a brilliant point. He talks about the importance of Spanish culture, of Chinese culture.
Right.
So there's a global inclusion that works over time to eliminate and erase Blackness specifically, and we have to identify that.
That is basically to say to his constituents who are racist, look what I'm doing.
Okay, so they're talking about DeSantis, of course, because of his banning the AP course, which was nothing but a bunch of propaganda for reparations and for the gay, the LGBT agenda. Again, your reaction to that kind of talk?
Well, reality is that in 2018, DeSantis only won by 32,000 votes. And that is because 100,000 low-income Black parents split their vote and voted for DeSantis because of his position on choice and education. Even though Gillum, his Black opponent, brought Oprah Winfrey into to campaign with him as well as Barack Obama. So 100,000 low-income Black parents voted against Oprah and voted against Obama and elected DeSantis governor of Florida. So that statement alone, Whoopi and them saying that these 100,000 Blacks who voted for him voted for a racist, you know?
Yeah, no.
But we really need to just look at the facts. You know, these people are living in a bubble, in a bubble. They haven't touched the ground or touched the doorknob in years. So how would they know?
I got one more for you. And this is from Disney. This is the latest from Disney, which has gone woke, as you know. This is a cartoon for kids. It's a reboot of The Proud Family. And they do a rap song in the movie and the cartoon, which is geared towards young kids. Which we'll play some of it here, and then we'll talk about it. This is 44.
Slaves built this country,
and we, the descendants of slaves in America, have earned reparations for their suffering
and continue to earn reparations every moment we spend submerged in the systemic prejudice, racism, and
white supremacy
that America was founded with and still has not atoned for.
Slaves built this country.
We had Tubman, Turner,
Frederick D.
Then they say Lincoln freed the slaves,
but slaves were men
and women,
and only we can free ourselves.
Emancipation is not freedom.
So just so I heard you laughing, but the end there, they say Lincoln freed the slaves, but only we could free ourselves. Emancipation is not freedom. I mean, this is what they're teaching and aiming for young kids.
I know. I wish they would teach the kids how to spell emancipation instead of saying that it didn't. You know, fortunately, I think they have gone so far over the edge that it's obvious to everybody this is propaganda, and Disney will pay the price in the marketplace for this. I'm not sure that's going to win them very many customers. American people, man, when you can get past the gatekeepers, are very sensible, and certainly this is not well received in the Black community. And white guilt is really an expression of white narcissism, to somehow to believe, convince Black people that their destiny is determined with what white people do, what government does for them. I think that's the worst kind of insult to say to someone does not have the capacity to be agents of their own delivery. And that's one message. But the other message is nothing more lethal than to convince the people that they are not responsible for themselves, that somehow whatever misdeeds occur in life, it's always someone else's fault.
Right, Right.
That to me is racist, to believe that only white people can deliver black people. That to me, that is really racism.
And just one final, not to interrupt, one final question. This San Francisco proposal for reparations of $5 million a person, I guess, if they could show somehow that they're descendants of slaves. I mean, my God.
You know what? All these guilty white people who are taking this stuff seriously and voting in it, I have become a self-certified racial exorcist. That I have given myself the power to exercise racism out of all guilty white people. So if you all just send me $50, I'll send you a certificate that's good for 2 years.
So if anybody
called you a racist, you say, but I have gotten a Bob Woodson certificate, and so I couldn't be racist.
Well, I tell you what, I won't apply for
gotten a Bob Woodson certificate, and so I couldn't be racist.
Well, I tell you what, I won't apply for that, but I would take a Bob Woodson certificate that has my name on it for almost anything, because I'd be proud to hang it up. Bob, Robert, thank you so very much. An honor to speak to you, and I hope we could do it again down the road.
Anytime. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Robert Woodson, ladies and gentlemen. Have a good night, sir. What a great, great man. And what a great interview. I love talking to him. I could talk to him all night. Just common sense. It's common sense. And I mean, this man's been doing this his whole career. And again, another issue, every issue that the left, that the right, that the Republicans concede. It is 20 some odd unarmed black men a year that are killed by police. And just because you're unarmed doesn't mean that it was wrong. If a cop says, if you walk in the streets, whatever, and you attack a cop, and the cop says, put your hands up, get away, put your hands up, let me see where I can see them, and you reach into your pocket instead, and you pull something out and he shoots you. I mean, there's all kinds of legitimate reasons. But again, I think the Washington Post did a survey. This was for 2020 or 2021, whatever. And they asked how many black unarmed men do you think are a year? And it was between 1 and 10,000, when it's like 20. Because that's what the media and the left wants you to believe. And again, where are the Republicans? Where are they saying everything you just heard Bob Woodson just say? They don't. They don't. They won't. And they allow the media to. Michael Brown's father? Michael Brown? Remember, hands up, don't shoot. That fallacy. It was proven to be a fallacy. The story went, witnesses said that Michael Brown was shot by a white police officer when he had his back turned. He turned around, he put his hands up, and said, don't shoot, don't shoot. And then the cops supposedly shot him. Didn't happen. Even Obama's Justice Department said it didn't happen. The witnesses lied. There were other witnesses who admitted that they had lied, but that's not what had happened. It was a myth. Michael Brown was a thug who attacked the cop. And he's sitting there on CNN next to a congresswoman. What was he doing there in the first place? And they mixed Trayvon Martin into this. He wasn't killed by a cop. I mean, it's just insane. But you can't say any of what I just said, or you're a racist. Well, call me what you will. I am not. I speak the truth and common sense. And that has become racist. And that is a very sad situation we find ourselves in this country and in this world right now. All right, we have a lot to get to. I hope you enjoyed that interview. Steve Malzberg right here on TNT Radio.
You should hear what George Eliason is talking about.
These financiers go into countries, set them up to fail. All they do is negotiate the depth of the debt sale. And they've gained enough power through this to actually determine who's going to be the head of the IMF. They got Dominique Strauss-Kahn in as an example. And while they're doing this, they're taking over the resources and utilities of the countries that they're working in. Ukraine, Brazil, Venezuela, Argentina, South Africa was a captured state. When you look at Iraq, to go in there, handle the Hearts and Minds campaign, literally set it up, run it out in Iraqi media. What do they actually get for it? Negotiating all the reconstruction. We see this with energy. It's what happened to Greece. When you look at what happened to George Papadopoulos, the reason behind it was that he was negotiating the Aphrodite gas fields. It was cheap gas. It would bypass Turkey, but the Bosphorus gas club wanted high prices. They needed high prices to set things up for today. Globalization is a very, very structured planned event.
George Eliason on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
Just a little heads up before something bad happens.
Move your coffee cup away from your computer.
Oh, no, 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 no.
So you can have more control.
Stop. You're texting your boss by mistake.
Uh-oh. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Warning, the cap is loose on that ketchup.
Ugh. Don't wait. You have the power to change the outcome. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
This is the Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Of course, Joe Biden gave the State of the Union on Tuesday. We played a lot of those bites and discussed it with Jeffrey Lord yesterday. Tonight, I'm going to let you hear some of an interview that Joe Biden did yesterday, last night on PBS, which we in the United States, like suckers, us taxpayers, pay for. There's not a conservative within 100 miles of PBS. It's all liberal trash, but we pay for it. And first of all, let me give you the TV ratings for the State of the Union. 20 said this is the estimates by Nielsen, who counts such things. 27.3 million total viewers, a 29% drop from 2022, which had 38.2 viewers. Why did I say 29%? Yeah. 27.3 million it was, almost a 30% drop from the year before of 38.2 million. Fox led all. Cable and broadcast with 4.69 million, ABC 4.4, NBC 3.78, MSNBC 3.55, and lowly, pathetic, disgusting CNN dropped 50% from a year prior, had their lowest State of the Union rating since 2014, weighing in with 2.39 million viewers. I laugh. Okay. So let's get to this. Here's a question from Judy Woodruff to Joe Biden about something he said at the State of the Union and how it jibes with what's really going on. Here's number 45.
The picture you painted last night, unemployment, record low, the growth, the economy, what is it, inflation is coming down, incomes are rising. And yet, when you mention the polls, when you look at the polls, CBS poll, 64% of Americans think the economy is in bad shape. There's an NBC poll, 71% think the country's on the wrong track. Why the disconnect?
Because the polls don't matter anymore. You got to make, 40, 50 calls and on a cell phone to get someone to answer a poll. Even the pollsters, you talk to them, ask them what they think about this. Look.
So you don't think it's your policy?
Oh, I know the policy. By the way, if you ask the same thing, do they support the Rebuild the Infrastructure America? Overwhelmingly, they support. Ask anybody.
Yeah, overwhelmingly, they support. Yeah, you ask them if they support the infrastructure there. Overwhelmingly, they support the... Ask anybody. Okay, here's the thing. Polls don't matter anymore. Now, maybe he's right to an extent, But when they're overwhelmingly against you in poll after poll after poll, I don't care how many people they have to call on their cell phone to ask. There's still people. What does that mean? Do you know how many people they have to call on their cell phone before someone will answer? What does that mean? That they're not getting the people who would support Joe Biden? They're only getting the people who won't? What does that mean? They might support if you ask them, do you support building up our infrastructure and the infrastructure bill that was passed? They might say yes. Doesn't change how they feel about what they're living through, what they know personally, how the economy sucks and you're the one handling the economy, and how everything else, inflation, sucks and you're the one handling it, inflation. You're in charge. Buck stops with you. So yeah, they might say, oh yes, infrastructure bill, I love it. But that doesn't change the fact that they think you stink at handling the economy. Infrastructure bill doesn't put money in it. Nobody's feeling that. Nobody's saying, oh, thank God for the infrastructure bill. Now we could eat. Now we could afford the groceries. What the hell's that? Apples and oranges. So convoluted answer. But remember, polls don't matter anymore. Ask anybody, says Joe Biden. All right. If I were a skeptic and a conspiracy theorist, I might say, and I'm not, but I could, polls don't matter because the fix is in. Doesn't matter what the people say. But I'm not a conspiracy theorist, and I didn't say that. You did not hear it. Make believe I'm a Democrat attacking somebody or telling you to attack someone or saying I'd like to punch someone in the face violently. You would never hear a Democrat when they say that, even though they said it. Well, I never said what I just said. Same thing. Here's another question to Joe 46.
One of the things Republicans say is a priority for them is investigating your family, your son Hunter, your brother Jim. They talk about access that they say others have gotten because of you, because of your political success. How do you plan to deal with that?
Public's not going to pay attention to that. They want these guys to do something. If the only thing they can do is make up things about my family, it's not going to go very far.
The public's not going to pay attention to that. We've been assured. We've been assured by the networks and PBS, you too, Judy, and I'm surprised you asked me about this. We've been assured that they're not going to cover this much. And when they do, they're going to blast the hell out of it. Polls don't matter anymore, and they can investigate me and my brother and my son and whoever the hell they want. Public's not going to care. Sounds like he knows things, doesn't it? Sounds like he's been told things. Public will care because some of these congressmen claim that there's evidence. And this president, before he was president, assured the world that he never discussed his son's business with him. Never. What a lie. What a lie. Now, on China and the balloon that we shot down. Here's cut 60.
Chinese surveillance balloon that went across the country. You ordered our military to fighter jets to shoot it down off the coast of South Carolina. But Republicans are saying you look weak. Mike Gallagher, the congressman, said
he's an impressive guy, isn't he?
Inexplicable that you didn't shoot it down earlier. Marco Rubio said it was dereliction of duty not to immediately tell the public about this.
Look, I told, it's not public, I told the military I wanted to shoot it down when it was safe to do it. They said it was unsafe to do it over land. They said they could learn a lot in the meantime by watching it go across the country. As soon as they had a chance to shoot it down over water, they did, and they're recovering major pieces of it to determine if we can learn anything from what they garnered and what kind of equipment they had.
You should have seen the expression on his face when she was naming Congressman Mike Gallagher, Senator Marco Rubio. He was smiling. The whole time he was smiling. So it's unsafe to shoot it down over land. What if it stayed up over land? What would they have done then? Why didn't we know about it until a civilian and multiple civilians started taking pictures of it. Or, well, why didn't we hear about it? Now, you think he poo-pooed it there? You think he poo-pooed it there? Nah, you haven't heard anything yet. Here's 61.
You know, there were several of these balloons that during the last administration didn't even know they were there. They didn't even do anything about them. So, look, I just think that the idea that there was a dereliction of duty is, I think, is a bizarre notion. China knows exactly that what the deal is with us.
Okay. I don't even know where to start. He giggled and he said there were several balloons in the other administration and they didn't even know they were there and they didn't do anything about it. Well, how can they do anything about it if they didn't know they were there? Now, this whole notion that there were balloons before and now you're telling us there were balloons in the Trump administration and not one person in the Trump administration, including the president, the vice president, John Bolton, who despises Donald Trump, every person that's spoken up, whether they hate Trump now or love Trump now or don't care about Trump now, said what? We never heard. Nobody ever told us that. We never heard about balloons. What are you talking about? And so now Joe Biden's mocking them and chuckling because they didn't do anything about it, even though he admits in the breath before that they didn't know they were there. How do you know they were there? Are you saying the Pentagon knew and didn't tell anybody and didn't tell the president? Let's just play that again, because this is really important. 61.
You know, there were several of these balloons that during the last administration didn't even know they were there. They didn't even do anything about them. So, look, I just think that...
All right, cut the cut. You can cut the cut.
The idea...
He laughed. He laughed. You know, there were several balloons in the previous administration. They didn't know they were there. They didn't even do anything about them. What? What does that mean? They didn't know they were there. What the hell could they do about them if they didn't know they were there? And how do you know they were there? This whole thing stinks. I don't get it, and it stinks. What's going on? Well, that's just one question. Here's 56.
Have relations now between the U.S. and China taken a big hit?
No.
Frankly?
No.
How do you know?
I know. I talked to him.
You've talked to Xi Jinping?
Talked to Xi Jinping before. And our team talks to their people.
During this and
yeah,
since?
Yeah, after this. I haven't talked to him during this.
Oh.
But look, I mean, the idea of shooting down a balloon that's gathering information over America makes relations worse.
What? Who is this man? He's laughing again. Does this make our relations with China worse? What he should have said was, you're damn right it does. What right do they have to infringe on our airspace? They better not do it again. Or else. We'll sanction them. We'll do things to their economy they don't want done. We'll reserve the right to go into their airspace. No. Why should it? The notion, a balloon. How do you know? I talked to Xi Jinping. You've talked to him since this? No, before. Well, if you talked to him before, how do you use that to answer the question whether or not relations are harmed by this incident? In other words, you said no. How do you know? Well, I speak to the president of China. You do? Okay, so have you spoken to him since this? No. Well, then what does that mean? I mean, this man is sleeping. None of this makes any sense. None of it. Here's more from Crazy Joe. And I shouldn't say Crazy Joe. I should say Unfit to Serve Joe. Here's 57.
I made it real clear to Xi Jinping that we're going to compete fully with China, but we're not looking for conflict. And that's been the case so far.
What? Of course, when he says he talked to Xi Jinping, he made it clear to him that was he's talked about this way before. This is months ago. Has nothing to do with the balloon. He made it clear to Xi Jinping that it just doesn't. He just said nothing. We don't want conflict. We're going to compete with China, but we don't want conflict. What does that mean to the balloon? Obviously, he laughed at what you said, because since you said that, and apparently before you said that, if you're right about the balloons being happening for years, while you told him that, he laughed. And then you discovered that he had been laughing because of what he did. And you say, no big deal. Nothing to see here. Wow. Wow. Is this country in trouble? Is this country in trouble? Now, on the classified documents, here's what Judy Woodruff asked of unfit to serve Joe Biden, 58.
Classified documents. It's clear there's a difference between the way you've handled this and former President Trump. You've cooperated with the archives, with the FBI. But I want to ask you quickly about what you said last September. You said just possessing classified documents is, you said, totally irresponsible. So what was totally irresponsible about the fact that you had some?
What they've informed me not to speak to this issue to any way try to prejudice the investigation that's going on. But what I was talking about was what was laid out. All these documents were top secret, code word, and all the rest. I'm not at liberty, and I'm not even sure. I made voluntarily, no one's had to threaten to do anything. Voluntarily opened every single aperture I have with house, offices, everything for them to come and look and spend hours searching my home.
Okay. It makes no sense. But here's the killer. You ready for this? Here's 59.
The best of my knowledge, the kinds of things they picked up are things that from 1974 and stray papers. There may be something else, I don't know. But one of the things that happened is that what was not done well is as they packed up my offices to move them, they didn't do the kind of job that should have been done to go thoroughly through every single piece of literature that's there. But I just let the investigation decide what's going on, and we'll see what happens.
Some of the documents were from 1974. Does he even know what he's talking about? 49 years ago? That's what they found? Documents from 49 years ago? What is he talking about, 1974? What is he talking about? And nobody bats an eye. Nobody bats an eye. I haven't heard not one person, excuse me, mention the 1974 reference. Not one person in the whole media. I haven't heard one person bring it up. I guess we're lucky he didn't start talking about how his son died in Iraq. I guess we're lucky we didn't hear about how, you know, his father wanted him to give his uncle the Purple Heart when he became vice president, even though both his father and his uncle were dead when he became vice president. I guess we're lucky we didn't hear about Corn Pop. I guess, you know, we're lucky we didn't hear about a million other, you know, his law school record, his college record, lies, his plagiarized speeches. So it's 1974 for him. It's not that unusual. Unfit to serve. All right. We'll come back. We got more. Not of Joe, thank gosh. But I don't know why I said thank gosh, because I stopped myself and it came out, shh, thank God we don't have more of Joe. Right here on the Steve Malzberg Show.
It's coming. It's coming. Deadly fungal infection spreading across the USA because of climate change?
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
The climate change disease is coming. The climate change disease is coming.
According to the UK Daily Mail, researchers predict that by 2100, U.S. case numbers of the fungal infection Valley Fever will increase 50%. Quote, spread is due to global warming. And just what is Valley Fever? It's claimed to be 10 times more deadly than the flu. This is the continued merging of COVID and climate change. All viruses are now caused by climate change. All infections are caused by climate change. If you don't support the Green New Deal or net zero policies, you are a grandma killer. Climate has changed for eons. Let's not allow the merging of climate and viruses. Reject the Great Reset. Start the Great Reject. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Steve Malzberg on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, yesterday the House, the committee held a hearing with Twitter executives talking about their relationship with the FBI. And Republican Nancy Mace from South Carolina, who I despise when she talks about abortion, I think she's just crazy. She did fairly well in talking to a Twitter executive, former Twitter executive, I should say, Vijaya Gadde. And here is cut number 48.
Another example of what Twitter has done to censor folks is from Dr. Martin Kulldorff, a Harvard-educated epidemiologist who once tweeted, COVID vaccines are important for high-risk people and their caretakers. Those with prior natural infection do not need it, nor children. The Twitter files reveal this tweet was deemed false information because it ran contrary to the CDC. So my first question this morning of Ms. Gadde, may I ask of you, where did you go to medical school?
I did not go to medical school.
I'm sorry?
I did not go to medical school.
That's what I thought. Why do you think you or anyone else at Twitter had the medical expertise to censor a doctor's expert opinion?
Our policies regarding COVID were designed to protect individuals. We were seeing...
You guys censored Harvard-educated doctors, Stanford-educated doctors, doctors that are educated in the best places in the world, and you silenced those voices.
Okay, she's talking to Vijaya Gadde is the former general counsel for legal policy at Twitter. And she, where'd you go to medical school? Oh, I didn't go to medical school. Aha, just as I suspected. Here's cut 49.
I have another chart I want to show you, Ms. Gadde. I have another tweet by someone with a following of a full 18,000 followers. This person put a chart from the CDC on Twitter. It's the CDC's own data, so it's accurate by your standards. And you all labeled this as misleading. You're not a doctor, right, Ms. Gadde?
No, I'm not.
Okay. What makes you think you or anyone else of Twitter have the medical expertise to censor actual, accurate CDC data?
I'm not familiar with these particular situations.
Yeah, I'm sure you're not. But this is what Twitter did. They labeled this as inaccurate. It is the government's own data. It's ridiculous that we're even having to have this conversation today. It's not just about the laptop. This is about medical advice that expert doctors were trying to give Americans because social media companies like Twitter were silencing their voices.
Yep. 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 And by the way, the Democrats and the media laughed at these hearings, poo-pooed these hearings, didn't have any use for these hearings because that's who they are. That's who they are. That's censorship on COVID. Now, Lauren Boebert, Republican from Colorado, not cross-examined, but asked questions of the former head of trust and safety for Twitter, Yoel Roth. And this gets really good, really good, even better than Mace. Here's cut 50.
Mr. Matt Taibbi, a respected reporter who published much of the Twitter files, said, quote, Twitter's contact with FBI was constant and pervasive, as if it were a subsidiary. Now, I want to better understand why he would suggest that. Mr. Roth, while at Twitter, how many meetings did you have with the FBI?
I couldn't say for sure, but
more than 10?
That's a reasonable estimate. I couldn't say for sure.
More than 50?
That seems a bit high.
Many meetings with the FBI. Well, we know how many FBI agents worked at Twitter while you were there?
I don't believe any active FBI agents.
Former FBI agents, how many worked there while you were there?
I'm aware of perhaps two.
Well, we know of at least nine because they started the BU group chat, BU for Bureau.
Oh, boy. So he met with the FBI 10 to 20 times. There were at least nine former FBI agents working at Twitter. So you didn't even have to have meetings with the FBI, which he admitted he did. They could have just funneled the information to the former employee, the former FBI people who were now working at Twitter. Unreal. Unreal. Oh, it gets much, much better. Here's 51.
Now, from the hearing that I've been a part of today, it's almost impossible to tell where the FBI ends and where Twitter begins. We have Mr. Baker here, a former FBI agent, and there seems to be a revolving door between the FBI and Twitter itself. Even Mr. Baker said that there was no collusion with the federal government and Twitter. But Mr. Baker, that's you. You are the collusion between the federal government and the FBI. And now with it, this is such a problem because we're seeing censorship all over.
And Mr. Baker that she's talking about and to, James Baker, former FBI agent who went to Twitter and is now the former deputy general counsel of Twitter. I mean, you can't make this up. It was being run by former FBI people. And it gets better. I promise you. Here's number 53.
You silenced me from communicating with the American people over a freaking joke. Now, who the hell do you think that you are? Election interference? Yeah, I would say that that was taking place because of you four sitting here. The Hunter Biden laptop story was suppressed. A sitting member of Congress was suppressed. A sitting president was banned from Twitter. You know, I bet that Putin is sitting in the Kremlin wishing he had as much election interference as you four here today. We've heard about threats to democracy. Well, what about shutting down a duly elected member of Congress? This is fundamental to our nation's governance, and you all attacked that very foundation.
Wow. I mean, she's doing great. I watched this twice. I mean, she was on fire. On fire. And she wasn't finished. Number 54.
230 protections? Well, those are for publishers, not for editors. And it's clear you were not acting as publishers. You were acting as editors. And Mr. Chairman, I think it's far past time that we remove 230 protections for big tech platforms who are abusing this protection. And let me just say, I'm not angry for myself. I'm not angry because I was silenced. I can reach out to Elon and to his staff, and I can see what's happened. And I can sit here today and hold you all in account. I am angry for the millions of Americans who were silenced because of your decisions, because of your actions, because of your collusion with the federal government. They can't reach out to Elon. They can't sit here today and hold you into account. We don't know where the FBI ends and Twitter begins.
You gotta love it. You really gotta love it. Good for her. Good for her. Everything she said was true, accurate, meaningful, emotionally felt. And she was speaking for those who were victimized by Twitter. I mean, this is only Twitter we're talking about. Forget the other social media platforms. This is focusing on Twitter, this what you just heard. Now, the aforementioned James Baker, Congressman Jim Jordan talks to him about the Hunter Biden story. Here is cut number 55.
Mr. Baker, you said you didn't talk with the FBI that day. Did you talk to the FBI about the Hunter Biden laptop story prior to then or after that day?
I'm trying to make sure I can answer this question consistent with the restrictions that I talked about in my opening.
Simple question. Did you talk to the FBI about the Hunter Biden story?
I do. To the best of my recollection, I did not talk to the FBI about the Hunter Biden story before that day.
Did you talk to him after it? You said your response is real specific to the chairman. You said, I did not talk to the FBI about the Hunter Biden laptop story that day. I assume that day is October 14th. I want to know if you talked to him on the 13th or before, or if you talked to him on the 15th and after.
I don't recall speaking to the FBI. Sitting here today, I don't recall speaking to the FBI at all about the Hunter Biden matter.
Well, then why'd you answer it the way you did?
I beg your pardon?
Then why did you answer it the way you did? If you didn't speak to the FBI at all about the Hunter Biden story, why are you getting hung up on, I didn't speak to them before that date, or I didn't think I spoke to them after that date. And, you know, I'm limited in what I could say about. Why don't you just say I didn't speak to the FBI at all? What are you hemming and hawing about dates? Just say, doesn't matter what date, sir. I did not speak to the FBI. And so Jordan's saying, well, why'd you answer that way? And he's I beg your pardon. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, please. You can't believe anything you hear. You really can't. You really can't. So good for Jordan. Good for the committee. Good for them. And what Boebert was talking about Section 230, that protects social media platforms in this country from being sued. Because they're publishers. But she's saying you're not publishers. You're editors. You don't qualify for Section 230 protection. And once and for all, the Congress has to address Section 230. They have to do it. This has been talked about for a long, long time, and nothing gets done. Nothing. Now, I want you to hear, speaking of, I guess we go from insanity to incredulity. I don't know. Bill Gates. On the BBC with Amol Rajan, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, via Mediaite. And Bill Gates is asked about him using his private jet to fly around to solve the climate crisis. Well, Bill Gates is having none of it. No, 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 no. Let's listen in on cut. Oh, I'm sorry. This will be 47. Here is cut number 47.
What do you say to the charge that if you are a climate change campaigner, but you also travel around the world on a private jet, you're a hypocrite?
Well, I buy the gold standard of funding Climeworks to do direct air capture that far exceeds my family's carbon footprint. And I spend billions of dollars on climate innovation. So, you know, should I stay at home and not come to Kenya and learn about farming and malaria? Anyway, I mean, I'm comfortable with the idea that not only am I not part of the problem by paying for the offsets, but also, through the billions that my Breakthrough Energy Group is spending, that I'm part of the solution.
Of course you're comfortable, and you're comfortable on the private jet. There's no reason you can't go to Kenya or any place else in the whole damn world and learn about what you were learning about in Kenya or whatever you want to learn about in another country by flying commercial airlines. But you need to be comfortable. And I love this. This comes only and applies only to the rich. They offset. They're offsets. In other words, they pay money for this or they pay money for that. So they could pollute the air. they could give off carbon emissions because they offset it with their money. You see how it works? What a bunch of hypocrite creeps. Hypocrite. Oh, I'm perfectly comfortable. Yeah, we know. We know just how comfortable that private jet must be. Oh, I should stay home? No. Fly like everybody else on a commercial airline. All right, folks. Tomorrow, no guest. No guest Friday is what we call it, I think. So tell your friends, tell your enemies, be here, same time, same station. And thanks for tuning in. Steve Malzberg right here on TNT Radio.